Welcome back to the Motherlode Show. I'm Jackson Dunn with you for another week here in the hot seat. I've always had a real confusion over what it means to be on the left or the right side of politics. And while I don't really classify myself as a political talk show host, and I don't want to be either, I think politics are a big, huge part of our lives and are honestly kind of something that we have fun talking about, like we talk about sports. We have teams, good teams, bad teams, and we really like to talk about politics. I mean, they do make a big difference in our lives. But the idea, the dichotomy of left versus right, and the way it's talked about in the radio and in the media has always confused me. And I really think that it's a false dichotomy of how we're looking at politics, and I'm going to explain that coming up right here on the Motherlode Show. So if you've been in politics, you know that politics is set up in two-party system here in the United States. Now, this isn't the case in all areas of the world. I would say that it becomes more prevalent as a country gets larger because people generally tend to align with a right or wrong stance on issues. And I think that this is actually the way we'll look at politics, and I'm going to explain this as we go through the show, is that everyone sees politics, as is probably right, as a good or evil dichotomy. Someone is saying that something that is good, someone is saying something that is bad, and so you always try to choose the good. So in larger systems, where you don't have as large a diversity, or at least the minorities within the country don't have as large a say, you're going to have that, a more of a clear-cut one side versus the other side dichotomy. And this has been kind of exemplified in the United States. And honestly, it's not really only a United States issue. You also see this in Canada. You see this in many European countries as well, although some of them are still run on very much so multi-party systems. Still, their alignments generally align with what we term the left and the right. Now, the problem is that a lot of people don't have a good definition of what a left side politics is as compared to a right side politics. And for this reason, we often fight over what the left does or what the right does. In the United States, just to make it easy, because this is the terminology that I think I'm used to and many of my listeners as well, it's the Democrats versus Republicans, okay? And the Republicans are considered a right party, and the Democrats are considered a left party. The problem is that the way that the right and left are characterized in the media is not actually what the definition of a right and a left party are. And for this reason, I think it obfuscates the real issues in our country. I'm going to explain. So when you go back to the actual definition of what a right and left party is, a left party is one that believes in state control, and a right party is one that believes in the opposite, in a free or open system. And I'm getting this from Diffin.com. Objective Standard is another one that has a really good dichotomy. It talks a lot about how the political parties have aligned over time. The problem is that fascism is oftentimes called a right party, and communism is called a left party. The problem is that's not true. In actuality, fascism and communism are pretty similar as far as the system of government. The difference with them is that communism, in its theory, its basic theory, says that the state should be decentralized and everything should be given to the people, right? But it requires a totalitarian oversight over people's lives. And fascism is more upfront about the fact that a leader is going to determine the direction of the country. So instead of going about it in a sort of indirect route, as communism does, where it says, oh, you know, we want to give everything to the people, fascism says the people aren't really important. What's important is the survival of the government or the survival of the state. And so people are subservient, not because they're under a system, but because they're under a leader. With that said, they're basically the same type of government, and yet they've been very much classified as left and right. And this is really, really a really good thing for the media to say. For the reason that when the media, and specifically media that is sponsored by a party, a left party or a right party, or it doesn't really matter what party, but a sponsored by somebody who has an agenda, they will intentionally try to make the terms unclear that they're dealing with. The idea of a left party and a right party, they're going to make those terms unclear, because if they can define what is a left party, and let's say you're on the left side of the political spectrum, they'll make the right seem bad to whoever is against them, whoever isn't part of their group, right? Or if you're on the right side of the party, they're going to make the left seem bad by redefining the terms. And this is the way that media, and specifically government and state-sponsored media, operates. The funny thing is that this really covers over what is the actual dichotomy in politics. And it's a dichotomy that we're seeing, that we've seen throughout history, that we're seeing in our system today. And it transcends party boundaries. It transcends left and right boundaries. And that dichotomy is good versus evil. Now, when you're looking at left versus right, you're looking at different systems. Left, again, is state-controlled. Right is considered controlled by the people, or a decentralized government. The better dichotomy, if you're looking at a left and right, would be on the left would be fascism and communism. On the right would be anarchy, where people have no government over them, like extreme right. So when people switch the terms around so that fascism and communism, which are basically the same type of government, but put them on opposite sides of a spectrum, everybody wants to be in the middle. Everyone wants to be a fair person. Obviously, we all want to do what's right and want to do what's fair. But the thing is, if you can shift a whole political spectrum to one system of government, people will always try to take the middle ground. We'll always try to be fair. We'll try to be, you know, a good person, and we'll try to stay objective. And so they'll try to move to the middle. But if they only see one side of the spectrum, they'll try to move to the middle of that side rather than moving to the middle of the actual spectrum. So in a way, it's a political trick to get people who are otherwise objective and trying to be, quote, good people, to move to that side of a spectrum. But as I said, the real dichotomy in politics is good versus evil. And parties end up breaking down over time when one party has stood with things that are morally good and one party has stood with things that are morally evil. Once that idea has been forgotten, once that morality that propelled one party to become a party in the first place breaks down or is forgotten by a new generation or by a new leader in the political party, once that breaks down, the party ends up breaking down as well. And then a restructuring of the parties take place. Now, this has happened a lot of times throughout the American political system, where a party has been built to do what is morally good. The Republican Party was originally intended to free slaves. Before them, the Whig Party was intended to preserve the rights of people under the Constitution. The Whig Party forgot its direction, and that's the reason you don't hear about it today. The Whig Party became divided over, as I said, they made a false dichotomy of what's good and what's bad on their own side, where they started running multiple candidates who disagreed fundamentally on what good and evil were. Some of them supported slavery. Some of them disagreed with slavery. Some of them supported certain economic standards. Some of them disagreed with certain economic standards. And for that reason, the party fell apart because it had forgotten the direction, which was intending to bring freedom, intending to hold true to the understanding of the Constitution that the founders had. they lost that. And for that reason, because they lost their direction, they also lost any kind of power in people's minds. But it takes a while. And for that reason, they had a ton of infighting that hurt the country and in many ways led to the Civil War. For the reason that they were traditionally against slavery, but they had forgotten their way, and for that reason they began fighting over little issues of economy, and they started making their moral rights and wrongs take a back seat to their squabbles. And for this reason, they fell apart. The Republican Party, which was the party of Abraham Lincoln, took their place in some ways as a strong stand against the Democrat Party at the time. And there was suddenly the war, because once again, there was the dichotomy of good versus evil. Those who supported the rights of slaves against those who really didn't want slaves, didn't want the disenfranchised to have rights. This is the way that history ends up working in many cases as well. We saw this as well in the Jim Crow era, where the parties were very much divided over. The Democrat Party was very much against the civil rights movement. And this is something that is sort of a myth in schools today, that the Democrat Party became the modern Democrat Party because of their support of the civil rights movement, and that is actually not correct. The Democrat Party voted as mostly a bloc and against the civil rights movement until Reagan, when some Democrats, considered the bollweevil Democrats, the Southern Democrats, started voting with Reagan on economic policies. And their party kind of fell apart, again, because their ideology split. Their party kind of fell apart and was reorganized in the 90s after Newt Gingrich, the Republican Speaker of the House, started the Contract with America, which was basically a reformulation of principle, of ideology, that the Republicans had to try to bring things back under control. But now we're seeing it on the opposite side. We're seeing where the Republican Party in the United States is sort of falling apart, is becoming torn apart, because they cannot agree on what are the essential things that are good or bad within their own party. Where some of them will stand strong against the abortion laws that are coming out, and some of them really don't care, and they'll fight over it, and some of them really split on it. And for that reason, they've lost some sort of coherence in what they think is actually good for the country. And for that reason, the party has come under turmoil and is falling apart because they don't agree on some basic principles. Now, enter a strong dictatorial leader, such as we saw in China. Now, China's a little different case than the United States. China, by the way, and most people don't realize this, China is a multi-party system. And I'm going to explain how China has used the principle of divide and conquer to keep people under control of the Communist Party while maintaining that illusion of choice, coming up after the break. Back here on the Motherlode Show, I'm speaking about how China has used the idea of divide and conquer to make people have the illusion of control while maintaining communist rule, and how that's applicable to our system. Now, China is effectively under one-party rule. It's, of course, a very strongly communist country. It's under very authoritarian rule. But what the Chinese figured out, if you try to make two parties or more parties, if you try to take parties and get people divided on certain issues in the political spectrum, you have to take one of the sides, and you ignore the fact that while you're taking sides, while you're siding with a certain political party or a certain faction within a political party, the perspective on a bigger issue is shifting quietly in the background, and it's being forced by an authoritarian government to shift in that way. what China realized was that when you separate people into these smaller parties where they can fight over little issues, the Communist Party, which is basically the de facto one party of communist China, can use its iron fist to impose regulations and rules on the people, allowing them to have the illusion of control, the illusion of choice, the illusion of being with a party that talks about good or bad, but with actually no power to choose what's right or wrong. This is something that China's done, and for this reason, China is not only strongly communist, but has been very effective at keeping control over its citizens, even when the citizens have been dissatisfied with the government. During Maoist China, Chairman Mao was trying to modernize the country, millions and millions of Chinese people starved and died because of his modernization policies. And he didn't care. He didn't care at all that millions of people were starving because he tried to set up new farming regulations. And people were not prepared or able to keep up with the production that they needed to even survive. But they couched it in terms of allowing the people the choice, allowing the people to vote on their leaders, allowing them to vote on their little leaders, right? Their little political parties, but while allowing the Communist Party to actually control the direction of the country. And this is the way that you see media and political parties do takeovers of a country. Usually they don't mess with the illusion of control by the people, but rather they allow the people enough choice to decide to allow the dictator into government. And then once that dictator has an iron fist on the government, they use propaganda to attempt to give people the illusion of choice, that they're choosing the hard road that the dictator has chosen for them. This is also happening in the government of Venezuela. Now, the problem with Venezuela is that Venezuela was a very rich country and has become very poor because of the terrible mismanagement of Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro, their current dictator, I should say. He uses that. He always allowed a little bit of dissent within the government. And there is a reason for that. Because if people have the ability to dissent, but not the ability to change the government, they have the illusion of control. They have the illusion that, okay, I don't like the government the way it is, but at least, you know, I'm getting a choice. And sure, maybe the majority of people pick the dictator. Right, this is the reason that Putin continues to have elections in Russia. Gives the people the illusion of control, while everybody knows that Putin isn't going to go out of power without a fight. He's not going to just let go of the government. He wouldn't get voted out of office. He would kill the guy who was running against him. But he wants people to have the illusion of control. Now, Venezuela, again, is a little different because the mismanagement was so bad on the part of Maduro and his predecessor, that the people of Venezuela basically woke up and are like, wow, this is not working for us. And Maduro simply doesn't have enough power within the international community to enforce his way on his people. He's attempting to, but he doesn't really have it. And for that reason, there is a very good likelihood that he and the government of Venezuela will actually fall at some point in the near future. But in general, it is useful for a dictator, especially one who cares very little or is actively against human rights, to create a false dichotomy, a false illusion of control on the part of the people so that they can come into power. Enter our system today. Our system is becoming that system. If you notice over the past, I would say maybe 40 to 50 years, certainly since the 1970s, our country has been tacking steadily towards a more authoritarian government, a more progressive as far as morality government, and a government that cares less about the human rights, cares less about the individual rights, and cares less about property rights of the people within the country. We've seen this, as things like Roe v. Wade was passed in the 70s. But it's continued up to the point that nowadays infanticide is allowed in some states. And there hasn't been a strong national response to combat that. We've seen it as many years ago, there were talks about, should we subsidize healthcare at all? And people kind of fought back and forth. But nowadays, the talking points are, should we allow for the Medicare system as it exists today? Should we allow for the continuation of Obamacare, which is a huge national push for nationalized healthcare? Or should it be completely nationalized healthcare like Canada has or socialist countries in Europe? So the direction of the country has all been moving towards what would be considered a left side politics. And I'm not saying left as in the American definition of left, where left equals communist, because we aren't necessarily a communist nation. But the fact is that we're moving towards a more state-controlled, more control over your life, less of your rights, and more that the government gets to choose what your rights are at any given moment. We're moving closer and closer and closer towards that, while maintaining the illusion of a two-party system. Now we have two parties, and at one point they were aligned along moral grounds, that one had a moral stance on one issue, let's say abortion. During the 1970s, you know, there was a very strong difference of the Democrats agree with it, the Republicans disagree with it. Nowadays, it's much more fragmented because the, as some people say, the Overton window has moved. The way in which we couch our terms, the way in which we define left and right so that the middle is skewed one way or the other, has changed. And it's actually really good for people who want to do evil in a system. Because as soon as you can falsely define what are the two parties, we can say, oh, I'm a Democrat, or oh, I'm a Republican, and we can feel secure in our goodness and feel secure in the fact that we have a choice over our government, while shifting the issues continually one direction. Shifting the issues continually so that the state has more and more and more control. We have more and more the illusion of power and less actual power to make change in our world. The problem is that as soon as someone evil, and I think we're close to that point, if not already there. And no, I'm not talking about the president. But as soon as you have the fact that evil, varying degrees of evil, are being talked about as the two choices that you have, the lesser of two evils, right? As many people talk about when they vote, they roll their eyes and are like, well, I'm going to vote for the best of, you know, the two horrible people I have to vote for. Once people get to that point, and truly get to that point, not just have sometimes the complaining attitude of, oh, things are never going to be good, that people always have, and this is a thing. But as soon as you get to that point where you actually have to be choosing the lesser of two evils, but no matter what choice you make, it's evil, this is where a dictator thrives. Objectively, there are rights that you should have because you've been given them by God. You were created with those rights. A right to be able to work for the things that you have. A right to be able to teach your family the morals and the values that you've had. The right to protect yourself against other people who would threaten you. These are things that we have a right to do. But as soon as we can go and we can argue in the way, let's say we talk about the gun debate. And back in the 1980s, the idea was, well, should we allow people to have automatic weapons? People were like, okay, I mean, automatic weapons are so destructive. There isn't a real good use for them. People don't really have a good use for them. And so for that reason, okay, let's all ban them. And generally, it was kind of a consensus that people will ban them. But it opened the gate of when you look at the Second Amendment, when it says the right to bear arms shall not be abridged. You started saying that the government, the current government that you're under right now, can define what is an arm and what is not. What is a right that can be abridged and what is not. And then, as the system has gotten more and more state-controlled over time, there have been more and more rules set on what type of guns you can have. Can you have a pistol? Not in this state. Yes, you may in this state. Oh, you have to have it, but you have to get a license first. You can get a license in some states, but you have to have a background check first. Oh, you have to have a background check and you have to have a mental health check. Oh, you have to have a mental health check and now we have to go through all of your social media to see if you have subversive ideas that might mean that you're a danger to other people. Oh, you might be a danger to other people. Now let's see what side of the political spectrum you agree with. And maybe that means that you're a danger because you side with a political side that has some extremists within it. So now that's the problem. The window keeps shifting and the government has more and more control over when and when your rights don't apply. And this is where a dictator exists. I'm not saying we're in a dictatorship now, but as soon as you create these gray areas of where can the government get into my life, as soon as you create that gray area, what makes a dictator seem like a savior is the fact that he says, look, there's no gray area. I'll show you what's good. I'll show you what's right. We're going to get right done. And he will set a black and white standard of what is good and what is evil. Or at least what he would like to redefine good and evil as. He will set that black and white standard and people will say, look, I want to just choose what's right. I want to choose what's good. I want to be a reasonable person in this case. But he is cleverly, the dictator has cleverly shifted the idea of what is right and wrong to align with only the one idea of what he wants. So that when people want to take the middle, the most reasonable road, or they want to take the high road and be a good person, they will choose his idea. Redefinition is one of the ways in which dictatorships start. Now, this was exemplified in a perfect way by George Orwell, the, of course, novelist who is very famous for writing 1984, but who wrote many dystopian novels about communism, about how he saw England of his time becoming more and more and more socialist. But he often spoke about how dictators came into power. And in 1984, which is a real masterpiece work, he told a story about a socialist society that basically had control over everybody's lives. And the way in which they maintained this control while maintaining the illusion of choice for the people within the system was they had no laws. So there were no things that were considered right and wrong on the books. But people could choose what was right and wrong for themselves. However, they were taken every day into indoctrination centers and shown, this is the high road, this is the road that's good, the following of the English Socialist Party, INGSOC, as it was called in his book. And then they would also show in those indoctrination sessions the person who was the antithesis of what was good, the brotherhood, as they called it there. It was basically this fake terrorist group that the government had made up. And people would have what was called the 2 minutes hate, which is kind of descended into our lexicon nowadays, in which they would be trained and they would be in stadium crowds of people who would all be screaming against the horrible evil of the brotherhood. And so people would think that they have the dichotomy of right and wrong. We have the Socialist Party, which is so good for us. And then we have the brotherhood, which is terrorist and wants to kill us all and kill our children and make our lives miserable. And so they would all stand together and scream against the evil that they saw, the brotherhood. And the English Socialist Party quietly chugged along in the background, not setting laws to give people that illusion of freedom, but monitoring every person's thought and quietly getting rid of and indoctrinating and torturing people into being in line with the party's actual goals, which were to maintain control over the people. At the same time, they set up what was a fake party system. in which they had the English socialists against the Eurasians and the East Asians. And these three parties were constantly either at war with one and aligned with the other, or they would suddenly switch alliances, so that people were always kept on their toes about who was their enemy. And so they would always have the enemy. Oh, enemy is East Asia if I'm an English socialist. Oh, no. This week, the enemy is Eurasia. And so people always had the idea of that I always have an enemy. I always have an external threat to me. The problem was the real ones who had control were the same in all three of the government systems. They were totalitarian regimes. And I'm worried that that's what's happening in the United States system as well. Because we set it up so that we have the Democrat and Republican sides, so that when we go to the ballot box, we vote, let's say, straight Republican, because at least you know they're not supporting the horrible abortion law as a party. Or we go and we vote straight Democrat because at least they're caring for granny and they're caring for the health by imposing health care acts. So we can vote on one issue and we can think we have this illusion of control because we're voting for the person we want. And all the while, evil people within our government are moving the window more and more towards state control and less allowing you to have rights. Our dichotomy of left and right, to get back to what we spoke about at the beginning, is false, because the idea that we've grown in our own heads, that we've allowed become defined by media sources and by interested parties, has been that we have a choice, a middle road between fascism or communism, when no, those are the same thing. Those are both totalitarian regimes. And in reality, we have a totally different system of government that no party is representing, in which we would both have freedom and accountability to be moral and good people to each other. And maybe that's a system of government that we should think about reinstating in the United States. I'm Jackson Dunn. This is the Motherlode Show. It's been a pleasure being with you. Adios.